Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have stories on the tragedy off the Mattole Bridge, and our in-depth interview with Sheriff William Hansel on cannabis enforcement via helicopter. But first, some local updates. This is KMUD News. Starting off with news from the Hoopa Valley Tribe. Quote, the Hoopa Valley Tribe strongly condemns the decision by Humboldt County Superior Judge Wilson to temporarily release the juvenile suspects charged in the March 10th killing of Hoopa Tribal member Dylan Moon for ceremonial purposes. The decision has caused profound pain and outrage throughout our community. Equally troubling is that the families of the victims were not notified in advance and instead learned of the release only after seeing the suspects present during ceremonial gatherings. No family should be forced to experience such unnecessary trauma. The Hoopa Valley Tribe recognizes the importance of our ceremonies, traditions, and cultural practices. However, these sacred traditions should never come at the expense of the dignity, safety, or emotional well-being of victims' families. Justice requires careful consideration of both the rights of the accused and the lasting harm suffered by those whose lives have been changed forever by violent crime. The release of individuals accused of taking the life of one of our tribal members undermines public confidence in the justice system and has created understandable fear, anger, and uncertainty throughout the Hoopa Valley and neighboring river communities. Decisions of this magnitude must also account for the safety of the public and the emotional impact on victims, witnesses, and families who continue to grieve. The Hoopa Valley Tribe stands in unwavering support of Dylan Moon's family and all those affected by this tragedy. We will continue to advocate for a justice system that honors victims, protects our communities, and recognizes the devastating consequences that these decisions have on tribal families. We respectfully call upon the Humboldt County Superior Court and all agencies involved to ensure that future decisions involving the release of individuals accused of violent crimes include meaningful consideration of community safety, transparency, and timely notification to victims and their families. The Hoopa Valley Tribe remains committed to protecting our people, honoring the memory of Dylan Moon, and all victims whose lives have been taken by violence, standing beside the families who continue to grieve, and pursuing justice with integrity, accountability, and unwavering respect for every member of our community affected by these tragic acts. End quote. From First Five Humboldt. First Five Humboldt has created a new nonprofit, the Humboldt Children and Families Foundation, to support their programs as dedicated state funding for First Fives continues to dramatically decline. The foundation broadens fundraising opportunities and is part of a strategy to ensure the long-term sustainability of First Five Humboldt's work to promote the well-being of children and families. The Vesper Society, a San Francisco-based private foundation, has provided a generous donation of $500,000 to initiate the foundation's first endeavor, named the Belonging Project. The launch of this project includes the purchase of a historic Eureka property at 902 E Street that will welcome children and families in a supportive and inclusive space, while also serving as the permanent home of First Five Humboldt. The foundation is seeking additional funds to prepare the home and grounds for public use. The foundation and First Five Humboldt are currently preparing the space for programming with community events and open house dates to be announced later this year. And next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. We have more answers from Sheriff William Hansel on cannabis enforcement activities via helicopter in Southern Humboldt. KMUD News reports. Many in Southern Humboldt have concerns over the Howard Buffett Foundation-funded Black Helicopter, known in recent times for doing cannabis enforcement work over Southern Humboldt. The helicopter is shared among four counties, but the nonprofit behind it, the Northern California Coalition to Safeguard Communities, or NCCSC for short, is led by President William Hansel, who is also Humboldt County's sheriff. We spoke with Sheriff Hansel to learn more about the NCCSC, the enforcement activities it supports, and why they are targeting the cannabis industry specifically. Can you talk a little bit about your specific role as president with the NCCSC and how that works in terms of interacting with the sheriff's department. You know, it struck me, you know, being new to this situation and just looking at the different interests, it seemed like a unique relationship having a sheriff be president of a nonprofit that's then awarding grants to our sheriff's department. So I just wanted to kind of clarify that relationship and exactly how kind of the barriers work and how the organizations work with each other.
Sure. So what's important to note is that this is a nonprofit that was originally started by five sheriffs, and it is requesting funding from the Howard Buffett Foundation to respond to labor trafficking and human trafficking violations, you know, in our North State. One thing that we've kind of concluded over the last, you know, since legalization, is we saw the price per pound of marijuana plummet, and labor's become the biggest liability when it comes to legal and illegal weed being grown in our North State. And we've seen labor exploited, and, you know, that is something that's been a problem in the state of California. To address that, we pitched an idea to the Buffett Foundation, and we were awarded the grant for our five counties, and we just recently added a sixth county, and that's Shasta County, to the coalition to address some of these issues. Now, this is just a funding source to add to shrinking budgets when it comes to marijuana enforcement in our North State.
I have a few questions off of that, but the first one, you mentioned illegal grows. Are there different rules for how you're carrying out enforcement, say with a, you know, legally licensed, DCC licensed cannabis farm versus, say, finding those illegal grows, or is treatment relatively the same?
No, it's not. So we're not targeting licensed marijuana farms. That's not what we're targeting, unless we have a specific complaint. And we've had complaints specifically that there have been some legal farms that are selling on the black market, or we've caught people selling on the black market, and that they're violating the rules of their license, and then we can serve a search warrant. But we're not specifically targeting. We're not compliance officers. We're not looking for compliance in those arenas, unless we have a specific articulable facts, probable cause to believe that a licensed farm is violating the law, and that is criminal law. Then, you know, we have other things to do. We're looking for those law violations. We're not the regulatory agency. So when it comes to our helicopter, you know, flying over various parts of this North State, you know, the helicopter that we used to have access to was funded, you know, by using, you know, federal money to fund the helicopter, and now we have a grant that pays for us to have the helicopter, you know, the Butte County helicopter funded. And so that's, you know, that is what's being used to locate illegal cannabis farms in our county. We're not flying over compliant, you know, legally compliant farms looking for violations of the law, looking for environmental crimes or labor trafficking. That's not what we do with our coalition, you know, air assets. You know, I think what people need to realize is that, you know, even though we have, you know, some pretty good technology, we don't have the ability to overlay a county map with our, you know, GPS systems in our helicopter to determine, you know, if we're flying over a legally compliant grow or not. And so they're looking for, illegal activity. Now, that's based on historic locations. Sometimes we have historical locations where people are growing illegally, and we're surveying those through the air. But we also have complaints that come in and that people are growing illegally. And so we are looking at those through the air. Now, as we're flying from point A to point B, you know, there may be another farm that may be in our view, and our deputies may fly over it, and unbeknownst to them, it may be a legally compliant grow, and so we don't know oftentimes until we acknowledge the GPS location and log that GPS location. We take some photographs, and then we go back to our database, and we look at the database, you know, through the county, and says, oh, the farm we looked at here, that's legally compliant. And so we just then delete those pictures, and we move on to the other non-compliant farms.
You know, I'm trying to kind of splice out this issue, because as you know, the cannabis market is endlessly complicated with different marketplaces, both legal and illegal, and different regulatory things going on, whether that's from, you know, sheriff, DCC, CDFW,
yep,
all of that.
Absolutely.
There's just a lot of layers. So you're saying with this, the enforcement utilizing the NCCSC-funded helicopter, even getting a tip just on, say, a grower selling into the gray black market, but they have a DCC license, but they don't have any evidence of labor violations, even that alone would be enough for that enforcement to come and happen?
It can be, absolutely. It depends on, I mean, we can't act on rumor alone, right? We have to have evidence and witness statements and those kind of things that backs it up. Because we have rumors are circulating. We have tons of rumors that are coming in every day about legally compliant growers that are selling out the back door, that have several other off-site weed, you know, growing operations, and they're bringing in their illegal weed into their legally compliant farm. We have a lot of that information that's coming in, but no one's willing to provide us witness statements of that. But there are times when we do have witness statements that say, no, I was working on that farm and it's not legally compliant. This is the evidence that I have, and we're able to act on that and convince a judge through a probable cause statement that we have probable cause to believe that they are violating the law. And at that point in time, a search warrant is authorized, and we're able to go onto a licensed farm to determine whether or not they do have illegal activity there.
Real question on this is, you know, is this really about general human trafficking, or is this more about cannabis enforcement? Because it seems like it would be almost... It would almost make more sense just from a colloquial understanding or a community understanding to combat human trafficking as a general thing. I mean, what are you seeing in either your enforcement or the data you're fed that the cannabis industry specifically is the one to go after for the human trafficking issue in 2026?
Yeah, so what we're doing here in the North State is becoming relevant to what is actually occurring. Now, you know, this isn't just the sole mission of our marijuana enforcement team. So the marijuana enforcement team is a standalone unit of the sheriff's office. Now, NCCSC supports marijuana teams throughout the North State. So the six counties are supporting their marijuana enforcement team. So it's not a specific team just solely going after, you know, human trafficking. When you talk about the NCCSC, it is focused on labor trafficking, human trafficking in the cannabis community, and the environmental damage, environmental crimes that are occurring, you know, with the cannabis community. So it's just assisting the sheriff's offices in doing their jobs, you know, surrounding the illegal cannabis growing operations that are occurring in our North State. We have forensic interviewers that are, you know, talking to the people on site to develop information about, you know, how they're being, you know, treated, how they're being paid, where they're living, what are their living conditions like, what is their, what is their role on the farm? And oftentimes they'll take us around and show us the pesticides that they're spraying on, you know, the plants, or showing us how the operation is working and how, you know, they're using illegal pesticides, or there's environmental damage associated with how this operation is being conducted. And so that's our big concern, and that's why the coalition is really important to help us with this function, because this is what's going on in the hills. This is what's going on with unlicensed illegal grows throughout the North State. And we're lucky that in Humboldt, we don't have a huge problem with this. We still have a problem, but it's not a huge problem. But you look into Trinity County, certain parts of Mendocino County and Siskiyou County, those counties have a tremendous problem with labor trafficking.
More of a community kind of engagement question, because we had a situation a few weeks ago where that specific helicopter flew pretty low over Red Way and not always understanding why the chopper's there and things like flying low over town, I think, really set some folks off. So I'm just wondering, kind of the combination of all these questions really is, what can community do in terms of feedback and working with you folks? And then, two, are you looking for more community engagement on this?
Absolutely. So I recognize the historical impacts and some of the PTSD that has been there because of helicopter activities of the past. I understand that there's a certain amount of anxiety that comes with a helicopter flying over your property. People are living in remote parts of our community because they want to be away from people and they enjoy their peace and they don't want to be what we consider spied upon. And so the helicopter is an important tool. It's an important aspect that we have in order to do our job. And the expectation is that we stay at least 500 feet above the ground and that, we're doing our aerial surveillance as quick as possible and then leaving the area. Unfortunately, illegal cannabis is grown around Red Way and around the vicinity of Red Way. And so we may have received a complaint about that. And, that is an easy way for us to, again, verify a complaint is by flying over Red Way. But it doesn't mean that it doesn't spark some kind of community concern or that it doesn't cause concern for people. I recognize that. And I'm more than willing to sit down with the cannabis community to talk to folks about, the impacts that the helicopter does make and to talk to people and talk about the necessity of it and talk about the need of it. And, unfortunately, we do have still a problem with, illegal activity and people growing illegally and we want to support the legal market as well. I think it's important for people to understand that we understand the impacts that the black market has on our legal growers, and we are trying our best to support the legal growers by going after the bad actors.
Many in Southern Humboldt are afraid of this helicopter-based enforcement tactic used by the Humboldt Sheriff's Department. More importantly, it is now clear and confirmed the sheriff is targeting DCC-licensed cannabis farms with no labor violations who sell into multiple marketplaces. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. A horrible tragedy occurred when a car went off the Mattole River Bridge early Monday morning, KMUD News reports. In the early morning hours of Monday, July 6th, a vehicle was reported in the water near the Mattole Bridge. First, here's the press release from the Petrolia Volunteer Fire Department for the facts of this incident response. Quote, on July 6th, at approximately 2:30 a.m., Petrolia Fire Engine 6632, Engine 6646, and Rescue 6674 responded to a vehicle accident alongside CAL FIRE Engine 1262, Battalion 1213, Southern Humboldt Technical Rescue, Honeydew Fire 6549, the California Highway Patrol, and City Ambulance. Upon arrival, crews discovered a vehicle that had gone over the embankment and was submerged in the river. Three victims were located alongside the river. Once access to the river was established, firefighters assessed the scene and immediately began CPR on two of the patients, while another crew worked to stabilize the third. When City Ambulance arrived, crews loaded the surviving patient onto a backboard, and firefighters worked together to carry the patient up the steep embankment to the awaiting ambulance. Tragically, the other two patients were pronounced deceased at the scene. Incidents like this are a sobering reminder of how unforgiving rural mountain roads can be, especially during the late night and early morning hours. Limited visibility, winding roads, steep embankments, and fatigue can quickly turn a routine drive into a life-threatening situation. Whether you're heading home after a long day or traveling through unfamiliar areas, slowing down, staying alert, wearing your seatbelt, and never driving while impaired or fatigued can make all the difference. The level of coordination, professionalism, compassion, and care demonstrated by every agency involved in such a tragic incident was truly remarkable. It is an honor to serve alongside dedicated first responders who work tirelessly under difficult circumstances. Our thoughts are with the victims, their loved ones, and everyone affected by this heartbreaking incident. End quote. We spoke today, Tuesday, July 7th, with Petrolia Volunteer Fire Department Chief and CAL FIRE firefighter Chris Gilda to learn more about the accident, the emergency response process, and the emotional impact these situations can have on our local firefighters. We'll start with Chris describing how he arrived at the accident scene.
I'm the Petrolia Fire Chief, but I am also a firefighter with CAL FIRE at the patrol station. I was actually on shift with CAL FIRE at that time. What was found is there were one or two Petrolia volunteers who arrived on scene in their private vehicles. They live close to the accident scene. They found three victims who had been either self-extricated or ejected from the vehicle. Two of them appeared to be in serious distress and were supine in the river, with a third walking wounded victim standing next to them. They weren't covered by water. You know, they were in a shallow place of the water.
Petrolia Fire Chief Chris Gilda then described the coordination between local volunteer fire departments and other agencies.
The local agencies within their jurisdiction have the authority of the call, right? Like the medical call or an auto accident or a structure fire falls under the jurisdiction of the local department, and CAL FIRE is there in a role. The way this works out in general is whoever arrives first on scene takes incident command. It's essentially we are all on the same team.
We also want to touch on the significant toll stress and emotions can take on first responders, including our firefighters. Chris Gilda described a program run by CAL FIRE and how incident responses have impacted him personally.
With CAL FIRE, there's a critical incident stress debrief, or a CISM team, that are highly trained individuals throughout the area that come together to assist in helping people deal with these incredibly stressful situations. Calls like this, where there are multiple agencies and that sort of thing, CAL FIRE will very often get their CISM team together and invite everybody else who was on scene to this debrief of the situation. It's a thing that we probably don't do enough. It's probably a cultural thing within the fire service. You're putting on that strong face or that's what you're demonstrating, and you could be having issues. We, as a fire service, need to really try and break through that mentality and work together to help each other and do these sort of debriefs, because it's a cultural thing of, oh, I'm fine, I'm going to be okay. In incidents like this, they don't necessarily hit you in the first couple of days. It takes more time for your body and your mind to process these sort of situations, and how you feel today may not be how you feel in 2 weeks. Speaking from experience, I've had things come up from calls 15, 20 years ago at different times throughout my career. If we're able to get together with trained individuals in working with us, it can really help that process along.
Petrolia Fire Chief Chris Gilda closed his remarks with a warning to help avoid future situations like the car-related fatalities on Monday in the Mattol River.
I really would like to encourage people to slow down on the roads. Like, we live in a very beautiful place, and take some time to enjoy it.
Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. A California bill rethinks life in prison sentences for young adults. Here's a story from Suzanne Potter.
Juvenile justice groups are pressing California lawmakers to allow parole after 25 years behind bars for certain age groups initially sentenced to life without any conditional release. Currently, people who committed a serious crime before age 18 can petition the state's parole board after serving 25 years. In the legislature, Senate Bill 672 would extend that to young adults 18 to 25. Karina Cardenas, a third-year law student at University of the Pacific, recently wrote a paper on life without parole. She says youth offenders should be able to plead their case by demonstrating growth and rehabilitation.
The board will evaluate an offender's personal development through psychological assessments, risk evaluation measures, and statements by family members, academic professionals, community advocates, and victims.
In a social media post, Republican State Senator Brian Jones stated that, quote, California Democrats are about to pass SB 672 to open the prison gates for over 1,600 cold-blooded killers. Supporters of the bill note that people convicted of the most heinous crimes would not be eligible. But in the U.S., people involved in a crime that turns deadly can be convicted of murder even if they didn't pull the trigger. This bill would show mercy to someone who acted as a getaway driver if the crime took place before they turned 18. Cardenas notes that research shows that up until age 25, young adults are still developing the cognitive and social processes involved in decision-making, impulse control, risk assessment, and social awareness.
And combine that with trauma and it's the absence of emotionally available caregivers, it really increases the risk of juveniles to resist peer pressure. And they are more likely to underestimate the consequences of their actions, which is the reason why they end up behind bars.
The bill is currently in limbo. It was first introduced in February 2025 and passed the state Senate. It has not yet received a hearing in the state assembly. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Frederico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmod.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located in the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyut, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.